Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and friend and colleague, Scott Greeson of Friends of the Eel River. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Tom.
All right. We are also joined by Mike Anderson of the Wilderness Society. Hey, Mike.
Good day. Glad to be with you.
And we are talking about a topic that I think is pretty fun, and I hope that you all will enjoy it too, which is the Northwest Forest Plan and how our management decisions influence on our public lands, or our public forest lands here in the Pacific Northwest. If you can believe it or not, Northern California, we are part of the Pacific Northwest. It's not just Oregon and Washington.
Baja Cascadia is what we like to call it.
Baja Cascadia? Okay. That's new to me. New Cascadia? I didn't know Baja Cascadia. Ernest Kallenbach, classic book, Cascadia, check it out. All right, so Northwest Forest Plan. So let's give a brief bit of what the heck is the Northwest Forest Plan, and then we can get into the history of why we have this thing. So Mike, what is the Northwest Forest Plan, and how does it affect our public lands here in California?
Well, thanks. Yeah, Northwest Forest Plan was adopted in 1994, kind of early on during the Clinton administration. It came after, probably a good 8, 10 years of really intense controversy over logging of the old growth forests of the Pacific Northwest, and in particular, the habitat of the northern spotted owl was the center of the controversy. Many of our environmental organizations. By the way, I work for the Wilderness Society up in Seattle, and our organization was very involved, along with many of the Northern California conservation groups, battling the timber industry and the Forest Service. The spotted owl was our friend in court, and we were able to obtain court injunctions that stopped pretty much all logging in the Pacific Northwest, including Northern California, during the late 1980s, early 1990s. So President Clinton came in with a promise to unblock the gridlock in the Northwest. He convened a all-day conference in Portland, Oregon with members of his cabinet, including Al Gore, vice president. Within a year, the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management had adopted a revolution in forest management for the Pacific Northwest forests called the Northwest Forest Plan. The major accomplishment of that plan was to designate large areas of the national forests as so-called late successional forest reserves, or LSRs, covered about 8 million acres and protected several millions of acres of the finest old growth forests remaining in this region. It was not just about spotted owls, though. We also had important protection for salmon and steelhead. And the Northwest Forest Plan included what was called the Aquatic Conservation Strategy, which protected large riparian reserves, corridors along all the streams, creeks, rivers within the national forests, specifically to protect salmon, steelhead, trout. That was adopted in 1994, as I said, and it held up under some court challenges and has basically been in place for the past 25 years. And now, for the first time, the Forest Service is taking a close look at updating the Northwest Forest Plan. So that is not officially begun yet, but it is quite foreseeable that within the next several months, maybe sometime next year, we will be in a new forest planning process in Northern California and elsewhere in the Pacific Northwest.
All right. You've given us a lot of things to unpack there. So first, I want to turn it over to Scott is the first thing I want to do.
Go ahead, Tom.
All right. Well, first, I want to just talk about how revolutionary this Northwest Forest Plan was, right? So instead of thinking about each national forest or each BLM land as unique individual parcel, and we're going to manage this one thing by itself, we're thinking of the whole of the Pacific Northwest as one entity, this bioregional concept. So we're kind of blurring political boundaries between states, between different national forests, between different agencies, the Bureau of Land Management, the Forest Service. And we're also incorporating ideas of conservation biology, this new field of science in the 1980s or so. Gosh, how do you say his last name? Michael Soule? Is that it?
Yes,
yeah, Michael Soule, who unfortunately recently passed away, but was critical to the establishment of this branch of science, conservation biology, trying to figure out how we all can survive on this lifeboat Earth. And it had ideas in it like connectivity between habitat. And so, you know, the Northwest Forest Plan maps out different areas and makes sure that those areas can be connected together. So it was radical, right?
Absolutely. It was groundbreaking. It was the first time, you know, not only that there was a bioregional conservation plan at this scale, but also really the first time, I think, where it was the scientists who were in charge of the planning. The Clinton administration made sure that the scientists like Dr. Jerry Franklin, Jack Ward Thomas, were given the leeway to come up with a plan that would protect the spotted owl, the salmon, hundreds, if not thousands, of other species that rely upon the old growth forest habitats. So, yes, the Northwest Forest Plan was revolutionary, and I think by all the monitoring that's been done, that it's been largely a success, though unfortunately, with the invasion of the barred owl into the region back in the right about the time of the Northwest Forest Plan. In fact, they started showing up and competing very aggressively against the northern spotted owl. So the northern spotted owl has continued to decline in its population at the same time as the barred owl has vastly increased. So that's probably one thing that, you know, the Northwest Forest Plan does need to be updated for figuring out how the spotted owl is going to survive against the predation and competition with the barred owl. But the other major updating I think everybody agrees upon is climate change, okay? The scientists, the policymakers in the early 1990s did not have their eye on the future of these forests with climate change. And also things like carbon sequestration. They didn't know really that the Northwest forests were not only important habitat for old growth species and for salmon and steelhead, but also they were like world champions in storage of carbon, and that would be such an important function of these forests for our overall efforts to defend against climate change. So there's, you know, definitely some new angles that we need to be considering. And also, I think some important social changes have taken place across the region that need to be taken into account. Back in the early 90s, really the only issue was timber-dependent communities. You know, how can we protect the old-growth forests and still maintain some supply for the timber communities and the mills of the region. So that was really the driving factor at that time. But, you know, a quarter century later, there's just a lot of different changes that have happened across the region. For instance, I think the cultural role of the Native American tribes needs to be better considered and factored in than it was back in the early 90s. And certainly, you know, the Northern California tribes, the Hoopa, the Karuk, I think I got that pronounced right, need to have a bigger place at the table, and things like traditional knowledge. And in addition to the academic scientists need to be part of the way we look at the Northwest forests and plan for their future, you know, using that great traditional knowledge that about, you know, things like fire, the role of fire in the Northwest forests is something that probably needs to be given further thought about forest management.
And we've certainly had an evolution in how we've come to understand fire. And, you know, just in the past 25 years, we've went really from a put it out as fast as possible approach to, you know, sometimes fire is an appropriate thing on the landscape, and sometimes we'll just let nature do its course. Scott, I wanted to make sure to have you jump in because I know that you had a burning question before.
Actually, you nailed it, Tom, in terms of talking about how the Northwest Forest Plan really sparked a revolutionary new approach for the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. Mike, you know, I've been following your work for 25, 30 years now. I think we both watched the Clinton Forest Summit with, you know, anticipation, hope, some dread. At the time, I think you're right to point out that, you know, it was the scientists in charge really bringing this information that the Forest Service hadn't really been willing to bring together before. And once we saw it all on the table, the answers were pretty clear. But even at the time, there was a real tension between protecting ecosystems and producing timber. And as you pointed out, you know, the timber-dependent communities were a real focus of our policy at the beginning of the Northwest Forest Plan. And I just want to bring it forward to the present. How have those timber-dependent communities moved past their timber dependency, or have they? It feels to me like a lot of them haven't. They're still stuck 25 years ago. And I honestly don't feel like this is our fault, but there's a problem there, and yeah. I'm not sure we've resolved it yet.
Well, I think the reality is that these are forest-dependent communities. They're not so much timber-dependent communities anymore. You know, most of the mills have consolidated. They've modernized. Actually, you know, across the region of the Northwest, the total amount of timber production is not all that much different than it was a quarter century ago, but the employment numbers have dropped by more than half because of the modernization of the mills, and there's been consolidation. You know, a lot of the mills have closed. The mills that remain are larger.
But they're more productive, basically, is what you're saying.
Yes, and they're very focused on, you know, the second growth, smaller. Right. They're not cutting the old growth forest. That's like kind of part of the past. So, you know, in the Northwest Forest Plan, we were actually trying, I can't say we, I mean the Forest Service and the scientists were trying to figure out how much of that old growth timber they could afford to do without in terms of, you know, the ecosystem, how much of that old growth could continue to go to the mills, to the local timber workers. And, you know, there's really no need anymore to be trying to log old growth forests for any economic commodity timber benefit. And in fact, the Forest Service has, with rare exceptions, been even trying to do any old growth timber sales and logging for the past, you know, 20 some years probably. So, you know, one thing we hope that the Northwest Forest Plan can be updated will be simply to protect the remaining old growth, those scarce old growth stands, and focus more on the second growth, because there were millions of acres that were clear cut and logged back 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s. And a lot of those clear cut stands are now fully stocked with trees, and they're of merchantable size and quality. So that's where the real need is, the opportunity is economically and ecologically, is to be doing more thinning of these second growth stands, but protect the remaining old growth for all their ecological value, their carbon storage value, recreational value, and their cultural value. They're just a priceless resource of this region. And we're so lucky that the Northwest Forest Plan was able to protect so much, because without it, the Forest Service was on a trajectory really to what they called liquidation of the old growth forests. That was their policy, was to liquidate the remaining old growth forests and to start thrifty young plantation forests that would become like crops of trees for the timber industry in the future. That was the revolution of the Northwest Forest Plan, which we can all be thankful for that we have it now, but we do need to be thinking seriously about ways it can be improved, updated, made contemporary for our current understanding of climate change, of the role of traditional knowledge about how to sustain forests, you know, through drought conditions, through fire seasons. So I really hope that as we go into the updating of the Northwest Forest Plan, that we can really see some significant improvements.
The EcoNews report, Mike Anderson of the Wilderness Society is talking to us about Northwest Forest Plan revision. So, Mike, we are part of a coalition that is working on these Northwest Forest Plan updates. And one of the concerns that I have is that we wouldn't have been able to have the 94 Northwest Forest Plan today, that we've lost the political will to do something positive about our public forest lands. And so one concern that I have, especially in this age of Trump, is that we have this revision process and we can only lose things that we had protected in 94. You know, I'm thinking about late successional reserves and emerging science about barred owls. One thing that I can imagine is a political trade where the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Forest Service put forward a barred owl removal program, and in exchange for killing barred owls, they get to do some more active management, to use a euphemistic term of the timber industry, of some of these, you know, big, ripe, mature, old growth forests that we've stopped from cutting. So do you think that this is a reasonable fear? Do you think that we would be able to put forward a similar plan today and get it passed?
Well, we definitely need to go into this with healthy skepticism, you know, especially considering President Trump's executive order on active forest management that he announced in California about a year and a half ago. And that's kind of the marching orders of the Forest Service, right? It's not about ecological conservation or restoration. It's about active management to reduce fire risks. So we need to be cautious, and certainly any kind of trade-offs about barred owl protection versus active management would need to be really thoroughly vetted within the scientific community. The Northwest Forest Plan was based upon sound science. It needs to stay grounded in the science and not turned over into a, you know, sort of a forest fire fuels dominance kind of policy vehicle. So yes, we need to be cautious, need to be science-based. But I think, you know, still, especially if there's a new administration, there's opportunities to make improvements. You know, this was intended to be a 100-year plan, the Northwest Forest Plan. That was the vision of its creators. They were looking for the long run. One thing about these Northwest forests is they are very long-lived. Okay, these trees will live to be 500, 700 years old. And the ecosystems that these forests have formed need to be looked at in very long time frames. The trees do grow quickly, but the old growth conditions evolve over centuries. So this was a 100-year plan to conserve and restore old growth, viable old growth habitat conditions. And I think it helps us if we look at in that kind of a time frame over the long run.
Mike, we were able to force the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management to start looking at our public lands on an ecosystem basis, and that, you know, formed the foundation for the Northwest Forest Plan, because we showed that under business as usual practices, as you laid out, the Forest Service was going to liquidate those forests, and it was going to drive species extinct, the spotted owl, but also, as you point out, salmon and steelhead, and lots of other critters, from tree voles to martens to fishers and many other species we've come to understand in the years since are also closely associated with old growth forests. But looking back, you know, the reason that the public lands became the refuge of last resort for so many of these species is because we'd already wrecked so much of the private landscape. We'd already heavily impacted the richer and even more productive landscapes that are still privately held forests in the Oregon Coast Range here in California. For example, in the Eel River watershed where I work, about 85% of the landscape is private. So it's incredibly important how we manage the public lands at the very top of the watershed, the state parks that are like a little string of jewels along the river, because that's where we can hope to maintain a sort of reservoir of biodiversity. And I guess I just want to ask, like, how well are we doing on that front? It seems like we've improved the rate of decline, but we're still sliding.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing about the Northwest Forest Plan that was a great vision was that they set up a long-range monitoring program. And so they've been monitoring the forests and the rivers for the past quarter century. And one thing that really struck me as sort of like miraculous, a miraculous accomplishment of the Northwest Forest Plan, is that they have been monitoring the streams all across the region, hundreds of streams being monitored many times a year. On average, they have found that over the past 20 years, and this is, this is a time of climate change, when we've been seeing longer fire seasons, it's been hotter, right? But the stream temperatures have actually declined by an average of 1 degree Fahrenheit during this period. And that is obviously because the aquatic conservation strategy said no more cutting along the streams. We're going to leave wide buffers. We're going to have shade. We're going to protect the headwaters, these seeps and the meadows. And the cumulative effect of all of that protection and the regrowth of the forest along the streams and the increased shading has actually been to make the streams a little bit cooler during a time when otherwise the climate and our forests and our ecosystems have been warming. If that was the only thing that the Northwest Forest Plan accomplished, I would say it's been a success.
Indeed, that's
tremendous.
That's important
for our salmon, our steelhead, other cold water fisheries, to have that water maintaining or even improving in their temperature, because that, especially in Northern California, that I know has been a big problem with some of the salmon runs, is die off from the rivers when they get too warm.
So, Mike, imagine yourself in the next presidential administration as the new forest czar. So President Biden or whoever it's going to be taps you for this new position and says, all right, you're given full control, free reign over this Northwest Forest Plan revision. What are you going to do? How would you change the Northwest Forest Plan to be even better than it currently is?
Well, I would say, let's start from what we have. We're not going to break up this Northwest Forest Plan into individual local planning units and lose that regional integrity. Second thing I would probably do is say, we just need to protect the remaining old growth, even if it's not in a reserve status now. There's just no sense for us to try to turn the old growth forests that remain into timber. And I think the third thing would be, let's take a close look at climate change projections, what is going to happen to this forest ecosystem with climate change. And let's let the science lead us on that. Let's have faith. Let's not come in with too much preconceptions. But let's also look at the monitoring, look at what's happened with the aquatic conservation strategy, being able to actually decrease the stream temperatures over the past 20 years. What can we learn from that? Can we provide even better protection for the water resources against climate change? And I guess finally, I would, as I said before, I would try to engage the tribes and traditional knowledge in the updating of the plan and incorporate those cultural values and that long history of understanding of how the forests have adapted over the many centuries, millennia, through fires and droughts. Let's bring that that traditional knowledge into the equation of how best to sustain these forests over the long run.
So, Mike, what's the one thing, if you could change it in the original Northwest Forest Plan, that you would change to improve it?
Protect the old growth.
Protecting all the old growth.
That was kind of sacrifice timber for the timber industry. It's never been needed for the timber industry. The industry has moved on to the second growth.
Right.
Let's just protect the remaining old growth. That would be my top priority, I think.
Amen. Yeah.
Hopefully we've all retooled our mills to no longer accept large diameter trees now anyways. You know, most of ours in our area, I don't think it could handle that big of a honker. All right, Mike, how can folks find out more information about the Northwest Forest Plan revisions and the Wilderness Society's work and your work at the Wilderness Society?
Well, the Wilderness Society is part of a large coalition of organizations all up and down the West Coast through Northern California that are working together to position ourselves to be the champions for protection of the old growth forests and their species. So the Wilderness Society, EPIC, and many other groups, Audubon groups, Sierra Club, et cetera, will all be working together over the coming months. And then the forest managers of these national forests, and they will be reaching out to the public. They're required to do that. And so as those opportunities for public engagement arise, very important that people attend the meetings or the webinars or whatever opportunities we have in the coming months. But yeah, work with our conservation groups and keep your ear open for opportunities to engage with the Forest Service in this updating of the Northwest Forest Plan.
Great. And if there's ever any opportunity, I'm sure it'll be on EPIC's website, Friends of the Eel, North Coast Environmental Center, and Wilderness Society. So be on the lookout and we'll bother you. I'm sure we are going to bother you about coming out and supporting our forests of the Pacific Northwest.
It was actually in 1994 that I came to Northern California to do a workshop on the Northwest Forest Plan. I don't know, Scott, if you were at that, but it was at the Hoopa Tribal Center, I think it was held.
Oh, and cool.
In 94, I was still in Portland.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Actually, maybe I was. Yeah. I don't know where I was at that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
A vagabond lifestyle.
Anyway, it was a very successful workshop. We did, I think it was one of five that we did.
So thank you so much again, Mike Anderson, for joining the Eco News Report.
Thank you.
All right, that was another episode of the Eco News Report. We'll be back next week with more environmental news from the North Coast of California. Join us on this time and channel. All right, time to take a quick break. We'll be back with Mike Anderson from the Wilderness Society to talk Northwest Forest Plan revision in just a minute. And we're back to the Eco News Report. Mike Anderson of the Wilderness Society is talking to us about Northwest Forest Plan revision.